This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1972. This program forms part of the Langara College Reel History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part in any form without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is Better Business Bureau Policy. The speaker is Vince Forbes. The audience consists of students at Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus.
We could, if we want, introduce this guest today as perhaps the first crusader of corporate affairs and the public image that they involve themselves with. In fact, over a great number of years, it's been very evident that the Better Business Bureau, not only in Vancouver, but its associations across Canada, have been a very viable force and a very active force in getting more protection for the consumer from two points of view. One is the association style of petitioning to various governmental bodies, and we've seen good results of that in the Consumer Protection Act, notably in the days of Ron Bassard. More to the point, though, at the specific level is the riding herd on the small businesses or the businesses that tend to aggravate themselves in the public image, sort of the situation where you could consider the Better Business Bureau a clearinghouse of information as to what business is reputable and what is not. One gentleman that quite often, I just mentioned to him that last time I was talking to him, he was in hot water on a suit where one of the not-so-nice companies decided to pull a bluff and countersuit. We have a situation where the Better Business Bureau does a great deal of good work here. Quite often they're unsung. You don't really believe that when you try to pick up the phone and call them. By random numbers, you're very lucky to get through to them for any questions. However, I'd like to introduce today Vince Forbes, who is the key man behind it and has done a great deal of work.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not entirely sure that I am clear on just how to approach what we're supposed to be going to talk about. I understand many of you are pointing towards eventually your own businesses and are entering into the business world in some way, and probably we're looking for some kind of advice as to how to proceed and so on. I think perhaps the best thing I can do is to briefly tell you something about the Better Business Bureau and what it is and what it is we're trying to do. And then possibly I could give you some examples of what not to do when you get into business so that you will be in business for a long time. And then perhaps we can have a question period, and if a question comes to your mind, make a note of it or make a mental note of it, and we'll have a question period to close it off with. What is a Better Business Bureau anyhow? It's a non-profit organization formed under the Societies Act, and it's supported entirely by membership fees paid to us by business firms who become members. There aren't enough members, there isn't enough money, and that's why we have the busy telephone system that you just heard about. We're improving, but as a non-profit organization, we're living up to our name this year. We're about $1,300 in the red at this particular point in time. Hopefully, by the end of October, we'll pull ourselves out and come somewhere close to breaking even. We have no association with government in a financial way of any kind. We're not allowed, as a matter of policy, to seek government grants to help us. It must be supported by business for the benefit of business and the public alike. We ran a check not very long ago, and This one was about a year ago. At that time, we were taking about 250 calls a day, and we were missing 1,000 busy signals. And that's with a staff of 8 people. And this bothers us very much, because in those people whose busy signals we're getting are some people who need us rather badly. We don't keep statistics. We used to, and gave it up in 1969 because it was taking up so much of our time, which I felt was better spent talking to people. However, you might be interested in knowing in 1968, the last year we did keep figures, we had 65,000 requests for service come into the office. 65,000 people either phoned us, wrote to us, came to see us, or whatever. We're quite often called by people who don't like us very much, a complaint bureau and the wailing wall of the public, and quite frequently when I'm talking to people, they say, your telephones are always busy, you must be getting a lot of complaints. Well, in those 65,000 people I mentioned, nearly 90% of them were people coming to us and asking questions before doing business. And this is our job. It is our philosophy that preventive medicine is better than trying to cure a sick patient. We do handle complaints. We're handling more now than ever before. I don't know what's going on out there, but there are more people who are paying less attention to customer service than there were, say, 5 years ago. Many more. But very briefly, and in a nutshell, oh, there's something else that I think of general interest. We are a member of the Council of Better Business Bureaus, which has its head office in New York. It also has an office in Washington. And this association through the council is extremely useful. The council compiles reports on national and international companies, which are available to all the member bureaus. And at the same time, this association puts us in touch with 150 other bureaus in North America from whom we can get instant information as to the methods of operation of someone who came to Vancouver, say, from Chicago or Los Angeles or New York or Dallas or Arizona or whatever. And there's been a fair amount of correspondence backwards and forwards between us and various bureaus in the last little while checking up on these land developers who are here from the United States. We've got 2 or 3 from Arizona, we've got 1 from Texas, we've got a couple from the state of Washington, and we know pretty well what their method of operation is, we know what's going on, and we know what to tell the people when they come and call us and say, should I invest in one of these lots? And we get into trouble every once in a while, too, because we have reports on these things. We get them from this, for instance, in Arizona, we get them from the Arizona Real Estate Commission. And they also have other reports which were available to us. And we quite successfully, I think, put the boots to a promoter who was up here trying to sell land and carrying on a big promotion and beautiful photographs of developments and all that sort of thing, all of which were somewhere in the future. They just simply didn't exist. And according to the Real Estate Commission, the land that they were selling was flat with no vegetation. In Arizona, I guess you know what that means. And there's some of the problems that we are having now. Maybe if we talk about some of the problems that we're having, it will illustrate to you some of the things that ought not to be done when you're in business. And maybe this is the way to go about it. Our biggest problem area at the present time is what might be called the service area. And then that general term, I'm talking about television repairs, automobile repairs, home repairs, particularly around the house, anything that involves some kind of service. It seems that more and more the businessman who is in these types of businesses is getting more callous and couldn't care less about customer goodwill, which probably accounts for the fact that in the home repair business, we've had so many changes in the last 2 or 3 years, and so many people have simply disappeared, only to pop up again under another name, that it's becoming evident that our reporting, both on radio and in television and in the newspapers, and our individual reporting to the people that's calling us, is having an effect. I don't know whether what types of businesses you are interested in particularly, and again, maybe this will come out in the question period. I sometimes think I sound like a broken record when I start talking home repairs because I keep repeating myself all the time, but obviously it's necessary. Because more people get hurt for more dollars in the home repair racket, and I use the term advisedly, than probably in anything else. Let me give you just one example of it's extreme, but it's an example of how people can get hurt. And again, we're up to the little old lady. And she is a little old lady. I've talked to her. She's mentally and physically incapable. A door knocker came around and knocked on her door one day and said he was in the neighborhood and it looked like her eaves trough needed repairing and started from there. We know this man very well. We've known him for years. Last June, he declared bankruptcy. And what he owed was unbelievable. Where the money went, goodness only knows, because there was lots of money involved. The thing went on and on and on. He found more to do and more to do and more to do. He owns a little home in Kitsilano, which is worth about $14,000, $15,000. By the time he got through with her, he claimed that she owed him $12,000 for all the work that he'd done. She doesn't really know what he did because she can't find the final bill that he presented to her for $12,000. She's lost it somewhere. She's an old, 83 years old. She's on her old age pension, and she's got some social assistance, and that's all she does have, so obviously she can't pay a $12,000 bill. So he points her in the general direction of one of the mortgage brokers that you see advertised in the Vancouver Sun's leisure section every Friday afternoon, who operate on the bonus system, which means they charge you a penalty for borrowing their money, which is added to the cost of borrowing, or should be. They talked. She went to the bank. She pulled out some money. She still doesn't know how much. Whether it was $500 or $5,000, she doesn't know. The lawyers are looking into this one. They'll find out. Then they went back to her place, and she signed some more papers, and she doesn't really know what she signed because she only has about half of them. But the important one was a mortgage on her home, a first mortgage, $16,000. We know how this man operates, and we would assume that of that $16,000, a minimum of $4,000 is the bonus which he charged her. He then sold the mortgage to another company, or an individual in this case. The old lady could no way make the payments of $187 a month. So our friendly mortgage broker came back to see her about 3 months later and offered to help her, and he helped her by putting a second mortgage on her property for $2,800, which included $800 of a bonus. He made up a new document of some kind. This one she has. And remember, just 3 months ago, he'd lend her the money, so he'd done the insurance, the legal fees, the appraisal, and all this sort of thing. It had all been done just 3 months ago. He charged it all to her again. And out of her $2,800, he took his $800 bonus. Then he took the two payments of $187 that she'd missed to the assignee of the first mortgage, and she wound up with about $700 out of her $28. This is in the hands of legal aid at the present time, and I believe the RCMP have become interested in it, too. It's a bit on the extreme from the dollar sides, but it happened. One of the big things that we had a great deal of problem with a while ago were some itinerant photographers who went around knocking on doors or telephoning people that they had a special coupon for sale. And I had a run-in with the federal government on this one and lost. Because the day this man... There were three of them in quick succession, and in two cases it was the same people, and in the third case it was one of the same people, all operating under three different names. They started in business, and on the day they started in business, they were offering a special, regular $12.95, special offer of only $3.95. And our question was, if you're just starting up in business, how can this be your regular price? You haven't been around to establish a price. And we took it up with Consumer and Corporate Affairs, and we finally got word back from Ottawa about 3 months later, which in effect said that the company's been in operation for 2 or 3 months, they've established their price, and then that was the end of that. The problem was that they were taking orders like crazy, taking the $3.95 deposit, and in most cases, people just simply didn't get their photographs. And those that did were very dissatisfied with them. On the bill of sale, it said that the balance will be paid COD when the photographs are sent to you, so you had to pay the postman for your photographs before you saw what you looked like in the picture. I've got a couple of samples down in my office, and they're unbelievable. They're so bad. So those that got them were not happy with them, and those that didn't get them were even more unhappy, and eventually they closed their doors and went away. Thanks, I think, to people like Ed Murphy on CKWX at that time, and Jack Webster and Barry Clark and those people. This is our weapon, publicity. We get on the air and we talk about people and we talk about the things that they're doing to people, and pretty soon they aren't doing it anymore because they're not around. The matter of refunds and service after sales and warranties and so on is a continuing problem. We have a lot of people come to us who are not happy with what they bought, not necessarily because there's anything wrong with it, but because when they got it home, it didn't fit as well, or it didn't match something else, or whatever the problem may be, they decided they don't want it, so they take it back to the store where they bought it. And there's no requirement that there be any sign posted up in the store that all sales are final. If it's a special sale, it quite often is specified, all sales are final, no refunds, no returns. It's not a requirement under normal circumstances to post a sign. It's a matter up to the store to decide, and people seem to think that they should be able to go back to the store and take it back and demand their money back, and this atmosphere has been created primarily by the major department stores who have this as a policy. Satisfaction or your money refunded. Some stores do refund money. Some stores will take the goods back and offer you a credit note so that you can buy something else in their store at a future date. Some stores say all sales are final, that's it. And that's where the problem comes in. Because obviously that customer is not going to come back to that store again sometime in the future. Articles are sold that are supposed to perform certain functions. There may or may not be a warranty. If there is a warranty, lots of times people don't read it. And it's up to the businessman to make sure that if there is a warranty, that the warranty spells out exactly what he's prepared to do for his customer should anything go wrong. It's also just as much the responsibility of the customer to read the warranty and find out what they're protected against. In terms of appliances, for instance, what is covered by the warranty? Supposing it were an automatic washing machine. Is the whole machine covered by the warranty or just the moving parts? If it's just the moving parts, then what does the warranty say? Does it say we'll send a serviceman out to repair it, or does it tell you to return the article to the manufacturer who will repair it and turn it to you? We had a classic in this a while, this is about 4 or 5 years ago now. Electric hot glass-lined hot water tanks with a 10-year guarantee. And people were buying these tanks with a 10-year guarantee, and then in 3, 4, 5 years, they were starting to have some problems. The glass lining was leaking or something, and it was guaranteed. And most people hadn't read the guarantee. Guarantee quite clearly said what you had to do. You have to remove the entire heater, send it by freight to the manufacturer. He would repair it and send it back to you. The problem in this one was, for people in Vancouver, that the manufacturer was in Palo Alto, California, which cost you a bundle to send it, a bundle to get it back, and duty on the new glass lining when it came back across the border. Guarantees and warranties are widely misunderstood, and if you are contemplating heading into business, make up your mind what it is that you propose to do, what you propose to offer in terms of a guarantee. And there are two words that are rather loosely joined together quite frequently, because there is a difference between a warranty and a guarantee. Something is guaranteed, but it's guaranteed against what? We saw a man's suit one time that had a label in the inside pocket. The fellow thought he was quite safe when he bought the suit because it said on the label, guaranteed. That's all it said. Didn't say guaranteed to stand up or guaranteed to fall apart. It just said guaranteed. And he was a little uptight because it did fall apart and it was guaranteed, and the store where he bought it wouldn't do anything about it. Generally speaking, a warranty implies something which is going to wear out, such as tires, batteries, and things like this, which will quite frequently be replaced under warranty with an allowance made for the amount of wear that's taken place from the original to date of purchase. I'm trying to think of another example. Another area where warranties, and I don't know whether this is going to affect any of you or not, another area where warranties become very important is in the matter of automobiles. Consumers Report, the very intelligent magazine that comes out of the United States once a month, about 3 years ago did a very extensive survey on automobile warranties. And the report finally was about 10 or 12 pages long in the magazine. And the whole thing was contained in one paragraph at the end, which concluded that all warranties on new automobiles in the United States weren't worth the paper that they were printed on. And the best of my knowledge, there's only one warranty that exists today, which is a good one, which is being lived up to, and which covers the whole car. New cars. The Big Three's warranty is still not very good because it doesn't cover a lot of the things in your car that can go wrong. The window doesn't work. The trunk leaks. All kinds of things can go wrong with it. And when you read the warranty, you find that, generally speaking, it's the powertrain that's guaranteed for 50,000 miles or 24,000 miles or whatever it is. We shouldn't maybe have some questions now, and then we can wrap it up with some other remarks afterwards and find out what's on your mind. Way at the back, and holler, please. That's the one. To the best of my knowledge, that's the only one in existence, and our experience, what little there has been since they brought it in a year ago, has been that they do exactly what they say they will do. If any dealer presents a problem, American Motors want to know about it. I couldn't volunteer that information because it sounds like I'm giving them a plug, and we don't recommend anybody. Come on, you must have some thoughts on your mind. Yes. We do. It's invitation by membership by invitation only, and where it's somebody that we don't know anything about, we go to the files to see what's there. And if what we come up with is not good, then they don't get an invitation. Last year, I turned down between 25 and 30 applications from firms who came to us wanting to join. And we get a little bit dubious about this because it's hard enough to sell, let alone finding somebody coming in wanting to pay you money. First place, we have a stipulation that you must be in operation for 1 year as a new business before you can be accepted as a member. In the second place, most of these people were the types of operations where we knew they were going to be using the fact of membership in their advertising or in their sales pitch to the householder or whatever, and we didn't choose to have them do that, so we didn't take them in. How do we get it? Well, we start, somebody calls us up about a company that we have never heard of before. It may be brand new, it may be just somebody that's never come to our attention before. We quite frequently get asked questions about somebody that's been around for maybe 8-10 years, but for some reason nobody's bothered to ask us a question, so we had no file on them. The first thing we do is tell them that we have no information, and we send out a questionnaire for them to the company to complete and tell us about themselves and tell us who the principals are and so on. Most companies will cooperate by doing this, and this tells us who they are and what they are and what they're doing, how long they've been around, and so on. It also leads us to the principles of the thing, and quite frequently through our cross-reference card index, we can relate these principles to something else that's happened in this town. It's rather interesting when those forms come back how many people are in quite important businesses and they put their name on as president. The next question is, state your previous business history. And it's quite amazing to me how many of those are either blank or marked none. And here is a man, obviously, of about middle age or something like that, and starting up a brand new business, which is requiring some money to do it, and yet he's got no previous business experience. Fascinating. The obvious answer, we think anyway, to our suspicious mind, is that whatever it was that he was doing, he didn't want us to know about it. This is the beginning of it all, and as I say, we can marry up the information we get to what's contained in our files on many occasions, and that's where the file starts. Our reports to people, generally speaking, go three ways. In the case that you brought up of a new company just starting up, our obvious answer has to be that this is a new company and has not yet established a record of performance. The other answers might be along the lines of, this company's been in operation for so long and there have been no complaints. This company's been in operation for so long and there have been some complaints. The company's taking care of them. Or thirdly, this company's been around for so long and there have been very few or a number or whatever complaints, and the company has paid no attention and has refused to cooperate. We think in those general terms, we're guiding you, we're telling you this is okay, that's indifferent, and this one's bad. Okay? On some things we have written reports. We tend not to make written reports on companies to local people who are phoning in because it's so time-consuming and we're overburdened right now. We do have a lot of written reports on general topics like pyramid plans and referral selling, and we have leaflets on buying used cars and home repairs and this kind of thing. Well, many times these, particularly the ones that we have designed ourselves, supposing you're inquiring about a vending machine operation that's just starting and the joker is running around town trying to sell vending machines. We send out a leaflet, and this leaflet asks a whole bunch of questions. And it's in this leaflet if you don't get the right answers to these questions, then look out. Total 8 full-time people in the office, plus one man who is part-time in the office and the part-time out on the road trying to sell memberships. Instead of 8, we should have a minimum of 12. Okay. No, it's based on the number of employees, and it starts at the present time at 35 for up to 5 employees. That's current. As of November the 1st, it's going to change, and it's going to be $50 for the first 10 employees. And then it goes up to, in 4 jumps, it goes up to $400 for anybody with 250 or more employees. And we just count permanent employees, people who have itinerant sales staff and things like this. We don't count them. Not particularly. We do get some complaints about one auctioneer and the prices that he claims to have sold things at when people weren't there to see them sold. But generally speaking, on auctions, no. No. I suspect not as many as we should. There are various ways of doing this, and depending upon what are the circumstances, what kind of an operation is it, how far we choose to go. Supposing it's a fairly well-established business, and there have been some complaints, but the company's attitude toward the complaints has been somewhat negative. In other words, they've tend to ignore them. This is part of the file, and this is reported to anybody who calls up about that company, but we don't make a big thing out of something like that. However, on the other hand, if it's a pyramid-type operation, and I'm thinking now in terms of Cosscott Interplanetary of Canada, which dealt in cosmetics and came up here about a year and a half ago from the United States, where it's been in serious trouble with law enforcement agencies. Glenn Turner, the head of Glenn Turner Enterprises in Orlando, Florida, is right now facing about 6 charges of fraud. And the whole operation has been a pyramid-type operation, and it's a bad one. We didn't wait for complaints on that one. They just got nicely started here, and we found out about them. We sent somebody to one of the opportunity meetings they were having to find out what they were doing. We contacted the RCMP, and we contacted the Securities Commission, and within a matter of days, they had raided the place, seized all the documents, which resulted in a cease trading order against Cosscott Interplanetary of Canada for 2 years. They're out of business. It depends on what it is, how far we go as to what we do about it. Sometimes we rely on the news media to help us publicize something that's going on. Some of the radio open line shows, which have a tremendous following, some of them, are probably the best way for us to get the story across, because you tell a story like this, and if you get the right hotline or open line operator who will let you name names, then you're getting to be pretty effective. And judging by the screens we get from the companies that we've talked about, I think we're even more effective than we realize. But it's a matter of, and still answering your question, it's a matter of judgment as to how far you want to go to rectify a situation.